Hey everyone, and welcome to the Cozy Club, a warm hug in podcast form for all the soft hearts out there. Grab a warm drink and join for wholesome books, games, stories, and more. I'm Monica.
And I'm Reagan.
And in today's episode, we're going to be sharing some spring favorites that we just think sort of epitomize the season for us. And then we're also going to be talking about some of the upcoming TV shows, films, and books that we cannot wait to get our hands on this season.
Truly. And before we jump into the specifics, if you haven't already, please subscribe to our podcast via your podcast app of choice. And if you haven't already or would like to, leave a review, as it does help us out so much. And I guess before we dive into the specifics, Monica, maybe we should define what is a cozy piece. Like, what makes a cozy piece of media springy to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's so different from, fall and winter, because those seasons, I want to feel warm and cozy or I guess I shouldn't use the word cozy to define cozy.
In this instance, it's to be bundled up.
Yes, safe away from the harshness of the outside, whereas spring is to be outside and to be enveloped in nature, the smell of grass and petrichor and all of that, and just the excitement for the magical feeling of spring. I feel that is what that feeling, cozy spring vibes, is for me. How about you?
I totally agree. The magic of nature, I think being trapped inside, which initially I love, being bundled up inside, enjoying my faux fireplace, living my life. But I think by the end of winter, I'm so excited to embrace this feeling of exploration, and also this feeling of childhood nostalgia. I don't know about you, but I just feel like when I was a kid, I would just wander through any forest or wood, and I would just make up my own world and just be so amazed by nature. And I think finding pieces of media that also lean into one, maybe that nostalgia, but also create, because it's one thing for media to be beautiful and full of nature, but I think being able to pair that with this feeling of existence or the past, or this it's like a very intangible feeling. It's hard to describe, but I think we'll talk more specifics, because I'm sure we'll talk about Ghibli and I feel like they do it perfect. It's this feeling of nature and life and the past and the present. I don't know. Just nature can feel very cozy to me. And I feel like springtime is when that really hits a peak for me personally too. With that in mind, do we want to chat about, I know I kind of just previewed, any favorite TV shows or movies we feel kind of really speaks to this spring cozy feeling?
Yeah, I mean, definitely for me, Ghibli is sort of the master of that sort of feeling. Movies like Ponyo, Howl, Totoro, Kiki, those really for me define spring and summer feelings. And especially coming back from, I was just in London a couple of months ago for the start of the new year, and seeing that there was this production of Totoro on stage, and that was just the most wondrous theatrical experience that I've ever had. I didn't even know what to expect going into it, and I especially after seeing, because I saw the Winnie the Pooh show, which is delightful, highly recommend if it's in your vicinity to go see it. But I kind of thought it was going to be something a little bit more simplistic, but it was this incredibly grand, there was a, they had a Totoro, and it was two stories high, and just the puppetry of it was so perfect and beautiful in its humanness. I feel that's the thing that it just really got the feeling of Ghibli so well, because obviously Ghibli is all hand drawn, and it's done in this very their films are created in this way that animation just really isn't done from major studios anymore, and it's this way where you can really see the people and the love behind the creating of the stories. That's how I felt watching the Totoro play on stage. And it just, like, seeing that just, like, really just made me want to, like, have that idealized experience of, like, laying in a field of grass. And yeah, and I feel like that is, like, Ghibli at its peak, like, all of those scenes. Like,
there's no softer grass than the grass that exists in Ghibli films.
Absolutely.
Just, like, captures the spirit. If you had to pick, I know it's impossible, but if you had to pick, like, for me, okay, maybe I'll start. Like, okay. Totoro feels very spring to me. Kiki feels maybe more summer. But, like, I love Kiki. I mean, I love them all. It's, and Howl maybe feels very spring to me. I don't know, though. It's so hard. Yeah, me forcefully trying to have you put these in boxes.
I just, like, for me, they're the four of them specifically, like, and like, Ponyo are just, like, they're just spring, summer.
Yeah.
For both, for, yeah, for all of them, so.
If you had to give one that, so say if someone listening right now has never watched a Ghibli film before.
Kind of a different conversation, because I don't know if I would, like, I don't think I'd go by season, like, oh, watch this because it's spring. I'd, like... And I would also, like, change my recommendation based on who they are as a person, you know?
That's,
like,
fair. Very custom.
If, yeah, because, like, because you can do, like, such a range of styles. Because, like, for me, my favorite Ghibli film is actually probably Spirited Away. And I don't know if that would be the one that I'd recommend to people first, as their first film.
Spirited Away, I think, was my first Ghibli film. I watched it as a six-year-old.
Yeah, and I was, like, obsessed with it. Horrified me. No, oh, no, so we did very different.
I was in love. I was in love with Haku. I was in love with him.
It terrified me.
That's fair. And it's,
like,
weird.
It was traumatizing. And then later on, I watched it, and then I fell in love with Haku. And I was like, okay, I see. Yeah, this is great. But yeah, no, it was scary for me. Especially because, like, I don't know, I'd only really watched, like, Disney films up until then. And I was very much, like, a princess girly. So
that's fair.
At that stage in my life,
yeah,
I was not interested in non-princess materials.
Totally fair. And I think you're right. I think it's really hard to, like, have a blanket answer, like, where to start if you never, because it really should be, like, based off your own loves. It's, like, the same way I feel like when people are like, oh, what is, like, a great, like, the best book that I should read if I want to get back into reading? I'm like, well, I like to do you know, it's based on, like, what you like, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what's going to be something that calls out to you as a person. But I have to agree. I feel like Ghibli spring summer is just peak, just how he like creates landscapes and how he like celebrates nature, and then also how he brings nature and like human technology or like human progression together, like very interesting things, like how humanity I guess interacts with nature in his movies, I think are just, I don't know, it's all such a visual experience, and it just is a stunning thing to behold, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess, like, on the same, well, not totally on the same, I guess both of mine that I put are both pieces of Japanese media. I will say, I feel like Japanese animation does a great job of capturing seasons. I feel like nature, maybe culturally, like, within their what they're creating is just, like, I feel like a significant aesthetic. And so these two pieces of media, I feel like especially capture the seasons really well. And I think in part because I love spring, they come to mind for spring, but they actually have all seasons throughout them. And it like impacts the narrative quite significantly. So the first is Fruits Baskets. And Fruits Baskets is just the bomb. So I obviously watched the original adaptation, read the manga when I was a kid and was in love. But I've actually started a rewatch of the 2019 adaptation with Clay, and he's never seen or heard anything before, and he keeps going like anytime they like reference a Fruits Basket, he's like, oh, it's like we're all just a Fruits Basket. I'm like, shut up. But it's been so much fun. It's been so much fun to rewatch with him, and it's so funny because I also feel like Fruits Basket's one of the best love triangles that's ever been created, and the way that it's completely balanced, it's so hard to know which way it's gonna fall or even who to root for. Like, Clay is a Yuki stan. He's like, I'm team Yuki, and I'm like, you're crazy, Kyo, but whatever. But it's just been really, one, fun to rewatch this. Very nostalgic for a variety of reasons. But I guess I've kind of derailed off my topic. I feel like Fruits Baskets, especially the new season, includes mm-hmm. seasonal animation so well. And they use the seasons not only to represent time passing, but like it's so a part of the story, and how they stylize the nature in the show is just so beautiful. And I also feel like matches the tone of the story too, if that makes sense. So like when things are cold or kind of more desolate, maybe people are more bare with their emotions, but then when spring comes around, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like everything, then the nature matches like the narrative style too. And I really appreciate that, I guess.
No, absolutely. I definitely see that.
And then not to go on, but then the other one, which I don't know if you've seen, please tell me if you've seen. And if you haven't, you need to watch it right away. It's like incredible. So it's the Netflix Ryla Kukuma and Karu. Mm-hmm. And it's acclaimed. You've seen it, right?
Yeah, I haven't seen all of it, but I watched a few episodes when it came out because you loved it so much.
Oh my god, it's like literally one of the greatest things that's ever been created. Okay, so Ryla Kukuma and Karu is a claymation show, and each episode is probably about 15 minutes long, and it is both the most heartwarming, charming show I've ever seen, and it's another show that is deeply narratively impacted by the seasons. And mm-hmm. everything is like very much tied together. And it's just one, a stunning show. The claymation and just everything was really crafted with a lot of care. It's cute, obviously. Ryla Kukuma is a beloved character. He's adorable. But I also feel like the tie-in with it ties in with like the seasons and growing up and nostalgia, but also kind of some of the painful elements of becoming an adult and like watching our main character Karu have to like confront and overcome those things, and then having the support of these really cute characters. It's like, I feel like Ghibli, Fruits Baskets, this show, they all have like nature and this like bittersweet element to them, you know? And and I think all of it works so well, but Ryla Kukuma is beautiful, and it's so easy to watch because it's so short and it's so peaceful, but also you'll cry sometimes. It really will throw you off.
I think for my other one is sort of another sort of theme versus a specific movie or show or whatever, and it's just like early 2000s films. Mm. And I think a lot of that is because the spring, just like, I have this internal feeling of spring as being like the end of like the school year, and being like this feeling of like having this like feeling of like impending freedom. And for me, early 2000s films like just have like innately have that feeling. So like I'm always around this season rewatching Clueless, Josie and the Pussycats, and Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen are like probably my three like top tier films. And that. All of them just like hold up so well.
They do.
For me, they just feel like spring. They just feel bright and fun, and like, okay, yeah, we're like shirking off the like sad girl vibes of winter, and we're entering you know, the sun being out later and things being more colorful, and some early 2000s films that are just fun and irreverent and such a good time. So those are like three that I'm definitely excited to be rewatching this season.
I love you speaking to the feeling of like, even though we're not in school, like there's some psychological imprints that I still feel too about school. Like, oh, summer is like around like when May, like end of April. I'm similarly, I'm like, oh, it's almost summer. And like, you can't help but not kind of have like a whisper of that feeling that you would feel like in school. And even like when August would roll around, like back to school season, you know, which was kind of like more of a stressful time. I had to remind myself, like, I'm not going back to school. Like, I don't need to like mentally prepare myself to like be studying again. Like, it's not happening. But that's so fun to like match up the media, like to kind of lean into that nostalgic feeling and like watch the media that like makes you feel, reminds you of that time, but also kind of matches that feeling. I think that's such a fun idea.
Yeah, and especially for me, like those films are always like, I feel like those were the idealized version of like what it would be like to be a teen, because I watched them when I mean Josie and the Pussycats I didn't watch until much later in life, and then like judged everyone who didn't go see it when it came out for not making it a bigger film that it deserved to be. But like films like Clueless, Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen, I watched when I was like really young. Mm-hmm. I remember watching them and just being like, this is what it's going to be like to be a teenager.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And
it wasn't like that at all. But in my head as an adult still, I'm like, yeah, this is what it's like to be
a teenager. I was joking with Clay, and I wonder if you feel similarly about this. So, okay, so growing up in the early 2000s, most of the media that we would reference to understand what teenagers look like would be media from the 90s or like the early 2000s. So fashion for high schoolers in my head was like that late 90s, early 2000s aesthetic. Obviously, it didn't match like my literal aesthetic when I was in high school, but like when I think of, because it's what informed my perspective of what a high schooler looked like, when I like, what am I trying to say? When someone's like, think of a high schooler, like that is like the image I immediately go to because those are the movies that inform, you know, that opinion, like based on when I grew up. And obviously, fashion is cyclical. And so right now, the trendy clothes to wear for many high schoolers, early college students or whatever, is that aesthetic from what that informed my view of what high schoolers are supposed to look like. So sometimes I feel like I'm in this like movie set, like I'm walking around and I feel like I'm like walking around in a movie set because all of the kids are dressed like my perceived viewpoint of what a high schooler should look like based off of the movies I watched as like a 7 year old in the early 2000s.
See, I feel like for me, because like that's how I dress now.
Yeah, you are like a movie character.
I feel like those imprinted in on me in a different way in that like I watched them and I was like, this is just how I will dress. Like, I remember it coming back a few years ago and being like, my time has finally come.
It makes me nostalgic in, like, a different way. Because it's like, I was too young to dress like that in high school because it wasn't what was popular. Like, emo scene era was, like, when I went to school. So it's just weird, like, oh, I was six, basically.
I had a uniform in high school, so I wasn't allowed to dress like a scene. And also, my parents would not have let me dress like a scene kid. But I pretended for my MySpace.
My mom worked at a hair salon during that era and she wouldn't let me get skunk hair. She drew the line.
Oh no.
But she did let me dye my hair dark auburn and get a lot of, you remember those feather extensions?
Yes, I do. I remember like a million fishermen being upset about them.
Oh yeah. Cause it made like fly fishing materials like less readily available or something.
Yeah.
I had so many of them because again, like, you know, we got a really good discount. Otherwise I wouldn't have done any of this, but I just was covered in feather extensions and had dark auburn hair and I would wear like dark blue eyeliner every day.
I'd do anything to have a photo of this.
I wish I took more photos, but I was like anti-photo. Like that was part of my persona, right? I was I also am like, I will not smile in any photo. Like I refuse to be in any photo. You know what I mean? Like that whole thing too.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like part of my whole thing. So there's a few, and also people didn't really have smartphones. Like, you know, people, there was like kind of smart, like document, things were not documented in the same fashion, which is too bad because I really wish I had more.
How is that possible? People had iPhones in my school.
People had iPhones.
And digital cameras.
People had digital camera. I feel like we did digital cameras was like in eighth grade. And then like freshman and sophomore year, people had iPhones. But I just don't think people, like culturally, I don't think we were like snapping photos of like everything all of the time. At least my friends were.
This is versus how like I find now. Out. I'm just like a massive narcissist.
But like now I feel like it's different. Like I take so many photos all the time everywhere.
Yeah.
But like I have like a few selfies and like a few things, but we didn't do a lot of that. I don't know.
That's so funny.
I wish I did though.
I'm judging myself so hard right now. The amount
I do feel like there's a Texas tradition. Did you do this in Pennsylvania? There's a Texas, you probably did it at train tracks. You know, like the photo shoot moments.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. We had a lot of fields though. A lot of fields. So it'd be a field photo shoot.
I took some emo pics at the train tracks.
Yeah, I just was going to say, I knew it.
With my side bang.
Beautiful. Stunning.
Some sort of like weird quote from The Virgin Suicides is my caption.
Like heavily black and white.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Beautiful. We really derailed off of cozy springtime content, but hopefully, you know, this was entertaining nonetheless. But my point is, high schoolers are dressed like how I view movies from the 2000s nowadays, and it's kind of awesome. My last, I guess, movie situation, my first movie situation, mm-hmm. is any Jane Austen adaptation makes me think of spring. Because there's lots of field mm-hmm. walking. It's like misty, so you can tell it's not like hot, but it's not winter either. So it's kind of like that rebirth, just like the blossoming of a love relationship. The springtime feels like a good setting. And I also think aesthetically, in the same way that I feel like in spring, I appreciate the aesthetics of things, like maybe even a little more. And I think, like, you know, there's Pride and Prejudice 2005, masterpiece, but also the new Emma adaptation, which I just love. Like, I feel like I crave to watch that. I'm going to watch that, like, very soon. I just feel like both feel very springtime to me.
I agree. I love those. I love the, like, the recent Emma. I love the new adaptation, the film, but also the, the miniseries that also recently came out with that guy who played Sherlock and Frankenstein, and I can't remember his name right now. But I also really love that one. It's like, it's probably my favorite, like, miniseries version of any Austen adaptation, not to, like, offend all the Pride and Prejudice truthers, but I just love that
Pride
one.
Pride and Prejudice truthers.
People get really, heated about
really
the Pride and Prejudice 2005 versus the miniseries. Like, I've had people, like, get into fights with me about it.
That they prefer the miniseries?
Yeah, and I genuinely, that's like, fair. Listen, I'm not gonna yuck someone's yum. Yeah. I genuinely don't get it.
I love Colin Firth. I think Colin Firth. He's so cute.
He's the only good thing. That's true.
I mean, 2005. He's the only
good thing in that series.
The one thing I will say that I've been struggling with as a Succession fan, I've had this whole
turmoil. McFadden. What's his name?
Yeah. So the guy who plays Darcy.
Yeah.
My beloved 2005 adaptation of Pride and Prejudice really hasn't been in a lot. And then he comes out in Succession, which is a fantastic TV show. But he plays the slimiest, most spineless, most pathetic character. And it's like, I'm like, oh God. It's to keep them separate. It's been an act of God to try to keep these separated inside of my head and not let one bleed over into the other. Because it's like, it's so hard for me to see him even as Mr. Darcy and not also think of that other character, because it's a very iconic, like, he's somehow played two iconic characters that he's just always going to be associated with, that you don't want them to overlap, because the Succession version of him is the least attractive person on the planet. Pathetic. And yet he's also Mr. Darcy. Oh, so hard.
Note to self, don't watch Succession.
It's so good though. The show is so good, but wow, it's so hard. It's so hard.
Do you have a favorite of all the Austen adaptations that you've seen? Or do you have one that you wish would be created?
I mean, I always love any new adaptation as long as it's good. Mm-hmm. I feel like I want, you know what I'll say? The recent Emma adaptation, I just love so much. And it gave me hope that, okay, what am I even saying? Emma is probably my least favorite Jane Austen story. I know. That's blasphemy. I know. But the new adaptation of Emma, like, made me love it so much more. Like, it changed not only my opinion about it, but also just, like, shows that it can never be overdone. Like, you can keep making Jane Austen adaptations and, you know, do it in different styles, add new things. And one, it'll still be worth the watch. And two, it might, like, unlock new stuff within the story that, like, me anyway, like, I hadn't seen before. So I always love just any new adaptation, but I don't know if I have a favorite. It's like impossible, because I feel like I can't be objective, I guess.
No, that's, you know, fair. Yeah.
What about you?
I think my favorite is definitely 2005 Pride and Prejudice. Like, it's just so perfect.
Yeah.
And Joe Wright, just as a director, anything he does, anything he touches, just ultimate romance and drama and just everything. His adaptation of Cyrano de Bergerac, have you watched that?
Mm-mm.
It is the most beautiful piece of cinema I have ever seen in my life. It is, like, I cried in the beginning just because it was so pretty. Like, not because for no other reason. It was just so beautiful.
Wow.
Anyways, so it's stunning. Highly recommend. The one that I wish would get adapted would be Northanger Abbey.
Yes.
Which I feel like always gets overlooked because it's like, it's not as like,
flashy.
What's the word I'm looking for?
Like,
not flashy, but like, it's more juvenile, which makes sense because it was written, you know, when she was younger. But like, that's why I kind of love it. It's just kind of like silly and it's so fun. And like, there are adaptations, but I just really want like a really good fun one. Like, I think that would be a really good one to do almost in like Clueless style where they like put it in a new era of some form. And I think it could be really fun in that sort of style. And I think that, so that would be my dream. Would also love Persuasion because that's my favorite Austen novel.
I love Persuasion too. I agree. We should fund this.
Yes.
Crowd, watch out for the Kickstarter, everyone. Okay. With that in mind, should we maybe chat about shows or movies that we're anticipating?
Yes. I just saw the one that's on your list and I'm so excited.
I can't deny it. Okay.
Love it. Would you want to kick us off?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Cocaine Bear. I can't pretend. Okay, this is not cozy. I mean, I guess it's set in the wilderness, but it's...
There you go.
There's something about it. I've never seen a trailer and I was like, what did I just watch? And why do I need to know what's going to happen next immediately? I am just so entranced by the concept of Cocaine Bear. It's so amazing. Funny. And the fact that it's based off, partially off of like real events, just makes it even better.
Is it really?
Yeah. Apparently a bear found and consumed a lot of cocaine and like went bananas. Stop. And they had to like capture it, which that's the concept of this movie. It's like this bear is going on a rampage. And I think there's like other stuff happening too. I didn't want to look too much into it because I want to just experience whatever Cocaine Bear has to offer.
Fair enough.
But that is a movie I'm looking forward to going
ultimate
to watch.
Cozy vibes.
Cozy vibes all around. For sure. What
my
about you?
Most anticipated film is The Little Mermaid.
Oh yeah, I can't. That's much more cozy. And I'm also excited about that.
I'm so excited. I hope it's good. Here's the thing. I have struggled. I think a lot of people have struggled with Disney's live action adaptations. And I especially, like, The Lion King especially was a rough one for me because, like, it's not live action, but they made it look live action. And it was really disconcerting to watch, like, lions, like, real lions, like, sing. I don't know. It's just a little odd.
Why?
Yeah, why is this happening? However, I'm more hopeful for Little Mermaid because, one, none of the animals are, like, actual, like, predators, you know? Like, I'm not waiting for one of these animals to kill the other one.
I mean, how am I going to live action a crab, though, to sing and play the drums?
I don't know. Have we seen Sebastian photos yet? Because I know that
Is it going to be a person?
I don't think so. It must be a crab. I would be so upset if Sebastian was not a crab.
This is what I'm most curious about. Honestly.
I'm intrigued.
Like, how are they going to handle... I mean, there's a lot of humans in this, so it'll be fine. But there is Sebastian. Yeah. He was a key character.
Yeah. I just feel like The Lion King is so based in reality, whereas Little Mermaid is full fantasy.
Fantasy. That's totally so valid.
Like, even though, like, the animals are, like, realistic, because the whole of the film is, like, this mermaid fantastical story, I feel like I'll be better with that. And yeah, I just feel like in general, I've always just wanted to see like a real like mermaid film before also. Like,
that's
just to have
point.
It look realistic. Yeah. And like, we never really, I mean, not to this like, caliber. Yeah, like H2O and all that. Not to this caliber of like execution.
For sure.
And so I'm just really excited for it. I feel like my inner child is just so excited to be able to see, like, that, see the glistening water. And everything that I've seen of it so far just looks stunning.
Yeah.
So, if anything, I'll at least love visually what it looks like. And I'm hoping that, you know, I liked Aladdin. I liked the, like, additions that they made to it. I thought that it, like, updated the story in a way that, like, added freshness to it. And so I'm hoping that, like, and even though I, like, didn't love it, I am hoping that, like, this one does something similar. And I feel that same sort of feeling. But yeah, so yeah, it's definitely been a mixed bag from Disney. So I'm not trying to like have my expectations be crazy high, but like mm-hmm. I just think visually it's going to be a treat and I'm so excited for that.
That sounds, I mean, you're right. I'm excited to see it too. If only to see how they're going to like handle some of the visual aspects of it. And we at least know yeah. it'll probably be like a visual feast, you know?
Absolutely.
So,
and also Hallie just looks stunning. Like, truly. As Ariel.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, iconic. 100%. And her voice and everything, it's going to be like yeah. the sound, the music, like visually and the music we know is going to be on point. I'm just curious how we're going to have Sebastian. That's the question I have.
We'll find out, I guess.
We'll find out. And then the other show for me that's mm-hmm. coming out is Ted Lasso season 3. And to me, this feels cozy because it's so yeah. endearing.
That's what I've heard.
Have you watched Ted Lasso?
Nope, sure haven't.
Yeah, I thought not.
Yeah.
I think you'd like it, though.
Classic me. I'm sure I would.
It's just really charming. You know, it's like everyone loves Ted Lasso. And it's because it just makes you feel good.
I want to watch it.
And I also feel like, especially in season 2, they did some, like, experimental things that I feel like you wouldn't mm-hmm. necessarily expect in, like, a, I don't know if I want to call it a sitcom, but, like, a comedy, you know? Like, a feel-good yeah. comedy. There was, like, a few episodes that were, like, what's happening? This is interesting. Okay. Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I'm curious to see where we're going to, this is the final season 2, so I feel like it's, like, going to be the perfect length, hopefully, and they're just going to carry everyone over the finish line. They're not going to drag it out unnecessarily. It'll just be nice to see all these characters that are just so lovable and British, you know, and just, and just.
Are they British?
Yes. Oh, do you not know the concept?
No.
Okay, I'll explain it to you. Oh my gosh, I just assumed. Okay. So Ted Lasso, basically, mm-hmm. Jason Sudeikis, he is a American college football coach. So throw the ball in the air, football coach. And got he's it. Going through like a divorce. And so he gets hired in the UK to be the head coach for a soccer team. So British soccer. He knows nothing
Stop.
About soccer. So he comes, but he's like this charming, feel-good guy, right? So he comes, yeah. and the reason why he's hired is because like the owner is trying to tank the team. So how Got soccer it. Works is basically you're in like, I don't know a lot about soccer, but I do know this, I think. So basically how it works is in the professional leagues, basically, if you do really bad, you can get kicked down to like a lower league. So imagine you play a terrible season in the NFL. There's like a B league that you get kicked down to. And you're trying to like re-qualify for like the big one. So basically if you suck and you tank, you get kicked down, which like your team loses prestige, there's less fans, there's like all of these things. Kind of an interesting setup, very unique. So anyway, this team is really close to getting demoted. Okay. So like it's really rocky. So he comes, doesn't know anything about soccer. He brings his assistant, but he's like so positive and he's like trying to win over this team of like British men and other men from, you know, other places around the world. And they're like, who is this guy? He doesn't even know anything. And you slowly see this like formation of this just charming team scenario. It's like there's so many people, so many personalities. It's just so cute. It's just such an easy watch, but it's emotional. It's just really, really charming. They talk a lot about mental health too. Mm-hmm. And they talk about all sorts of things, but the concept is just hilarious. Basically, it's a great setup. He's like super Southern too. He's like, yeah. Hi y'all. I'm going to be teaching y'all the great sport of football, but not American football. You know, and it's like, it's really funny.
It's funny that you say that. Cause so one of my favorite genres, I love, mm-hmm. love sports media. Oh, like sports, I don't
love
watch
this.
Sports.
It's so inspiring.
I like, will never watch a game of anything.
Yeah.
But put sports in a movie mm-hmm. or a TV show and I am there. So
oh, you're gonna love this. Because it has all of that, you know, like the watching people like begrudgingly begin to work together and then yeah. the inspiring team moments and then there's the intensity of a game, but then there's the before and after. Like it has all of that in sports media. Like, you know, like haiku. Like haiku has, you know, it's, you know.
Yes, like haiku. Oh my gosh. I love that comparison.
But anyway, season 3 is dropping, I think, in March sometime soon. So.
Exciting.
It is exciting.
My most anticipated show that's coming out, I think will already be out by the time that this episode is out. So stay tuned for my thoughts on that in a future episode or somewhere else. But it's Daisy Jones and the Six.
Woo!
Just coming to Amazon. And okay, here's the thing. When I read Daisy Jones, did I love it? No. Mm-hmm. But I love, so as much as I love sports things, like sports related media, I love music related stories. Mm-hmm. Like Almost Famous is one of my favorite movies of all time. Mm-hmm. How to Build a Girl by Caitlin Moran, one of my favorite books of all time. The adaptation of that, one of my favorite movies of all time. Like, I just love films about music, and it's especially a Rocket Man, genuinely one of my favorite films of all time.
I love Rocket Man. Through a phase. It's so excellent.
Yes. I went through a phase where I like watched Rocket Man, I think like once a day for like a month.
Oh yeah. I feel like I remember that. You really did love Rocket Man. It's a good movie though.
It became a personality trait. I can't like things casually.
So. No, you can't.
I really can't. I need to like love it, get it tattooed on my body,
and then let it go for a while.
Yes. Anyways, so especially like music things or like, or films like that where it's like really dependent on like a certain time period, especially the 70s. I just like love that. And so I think I'm going to love this adaptation. And I will say, like, even though I didn't love the book, I really loved the, like, so I read it as an audiobook and like that was really fun because it was a full cast. And just my issue was I just felt like it lacked a lot of depth. Because it's written as a transcript, and so like obviously you're it's going to do that, and I feel like the show, like having it be adapted and having it be fleshed out, I feel like I'm just gonna really love it a lot more.
It's gonna fill in a lot of blanks.
Yeah, and I think it'll make me like appreciate some characters who I didn't really appreciate their like growth in the actual book. I think maybe it'll allow me to see that a bit better.
I also feel like L.A. in the 70s is like a peak setting, always.
Absolutely. And the music in it is going to, because Phoebe Bridgers is doing some of the music.
Oh my gosh.
And this is such an unpopular opinion because people are really upset that they're changing the lyrics that were in the book. But I'm so sorry. Taylor Jenkins Reid is not.
She's not a lyricist.
Yeah. And like those lyrics were like fine when you like need to like get across something in a book. But like we're getting like real lyricists, real musicians, this to, like, is create like, music that actually sounds like that.
We have an opportunity to have another, you remember, is it not Rolling in the Deep End by Lady Gaga? You know, because she wrote that soundtrack for that movie. We have an opportunity to have like fantastic show, song, crossover here.
Yeah.
I'm excited for this too. I'm really curious to see how it's going to turn out. I'm crossing my fingers.
Me too.
I feel like they handled The Summer I Turned Pretty so well that I'm just hoping now that they're just going to knock every adaptation out of the water.
Shall we discuss our anticipated books?
Ooh, yes. I feel like I have one really big one for me personally that I'm so excited about. It comes out, actually, it's already out by the time this episode is live, but it just came out. And it is The Adventures of Amina Al-Sarafi by S.A. Chakraborty. It's her new book. And I am hyped to pick this book up. It just sounds like everything I could want. So it's a seafaring adventure story. And we basically follow our main character, Amina Al-Sarafi. And she's had like a storied, scandalous career as one of the Indian Ocean's most notorious pirates. And she's survived it all, right? And at the beginning of this book, she's basically planning to retire, you know? But then at the beginning of this book, she's basically tracked down by one of her crewmen's like wealthy mothers, and this crewman has disappeared. So she goes off on one last adventure to try to save them, to basically cash in on this fortune. But, you know, of course, all different types of things happen. I just love a seafaring quest adventure. I also love this idea of it centering an older woman as like, she has this storied career. Like, she's very good at her job. She's ready to retire. You know, it's not like a quest where someone's like setting out for the first time. It's more like setting out for the last time in theory. I'm sure there's going to be more books, but I just think we very rarely get like an older female fantasy centered story. And I'm very curious to see how the whole thing is going to unfold personally. It just sounds like a lot of fun.
No, that sounds really good. I'm excited for that one. All right, so my most anticipated book for the season is maybe kind of a little bit out of left field, but this author is like the human embodiment of cozy to me personally. So the book is The Making of Another Major Motion Picture Masterpiece, and the author is Tom Hanks.
Oh my gosh. Tell me more.
I love Tom Hanks so much. I mean, everyone, who doesn't love Tom Hanks? He is just so lovely as someone who I've never met. It's fully parasocial feelings happening right now. It's an illustrated novel too, and it's literary fiction. So it is a novel about the making of a star-studded multi-million-dollar superhero action film, and the humble comic books that inspired it. So like we follow this comic book writer and then like the story of his story being adapted. Part one of the story takes place in 1947, follow a troubled soldier who's returning home from the war, and meets his talented 5-year-old nephew, and then disappears for a few years. And then it cuts to the 1970s, and we follow now the nephew who is drawing these underground comic books in California. Mm-hmm. And he reconnects with his uncle. And then from there, it also cuts to present day with this director who has discovered these comics and is adapting them.
This sounds amazing.
Yeah, I'm so excited. First of all, Tom Hanks, yes.
Yes.
And so also just having someone who like fully understands the like Hollywood world, mm-hmm. like creating a story of fiction about Hollywood, mm-hmm. I think is amazing. Also, like, absolutely this book is going to be adapted.
100%.
So I'm so excited. And like 100% Tom Hanks is going to play the uncle.
You're so right.
Like, he has to, right?
Totally.
So yeah, I'm like, I need to read this book. I'm so excited for it. I'm so excited for when it gets announced as an adaption or whatever. And yeah, I cannot wait. It just sounds delightful.
I also just love books that have that sort of like thread through time.
Yes.
Sort of thing. I always love that device.
Yeah. So and I'm also excited because they are going to be like illustrating the comics too. So we get that interspersed.
Oh my gosh. Say no more. I'm so excited. And then the second book for me that's coming out this year that I'm excited about is A House with Good Bones by T. Kingfisher. So I read Nettle and Bone by this author last year and loved it so much. I have a huge soft spot for like very strange, whimsical, fairy tale, mm-hmm. quest fantasy. It's just something I eat up every time. And Nettle and Bone was a perfect example of this. It's like 250 pages long. Not even long, but the amount of like character work and everything that she fit into this just was amazing. But she's coming up with a new book that's also only like 250 pages long. But it's a gothic horror, which normally, it's a southern gothic horror. Sorry, need to add that in too. Normally, I have to be pretty wary with horror, but I love gothic horror. Mm-hmm. It just comes from my Jane Eyre obsession. And I love a southern gothic horror, which is like a sub-genre of horror, I guess. And so this is basically exploring, the tagline is like, exploring the dark twisted roots lurking just beneath the veneer of a perfect home and family. And I just am really curious about this because I'm curious because I feel like T. Kingfisher is actually known for writing really cozy fantasy relationships. Like Nettle and Bone had some dark elements, but I would say it's like a pretty cozy story. And then she has other works that are very beloved characters, more romance centered even. So like, I would say she is like in the cozy fantasy-esque space, you know? So I'm curious to see how her writing style is going to translate to something that I wouldn't necessarily define as cozy gothic, like a gothic horror, but she writes such great characters. Like, I'm just kind of interested to see how the whole thing is going to come together, basically. I feel like it's going to be an experience.
No, I agree. For me, I like fully put gothic horror under cozy. Like, see, I wouldn't put normal horror.
But gothic, because it's like
once
vibe-y.
You feel the gothic. Yeah, yeah. Once there's an aesthetic, I feel like then it's cozy.
Because cozy is an aesthetic in itself, you know?
It is. Because then you get to, like, it is a form of escapism.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Maybe that's why I can do gothic horror and not regular horror.
Maybe. My other most anticipated book is Yellowface by R.F. Kuang.
Yes, that's a good
one. And this one, yeah, it just sounds so interesting. Like, I'm so intrigued for the concept. So, basically, we follow this author. Well, so it's these two women who kind of like they come up together. They both went to Yale together, and they're both were sort of on the same track to be rising stars. But one of them, who is Asian, Athena Liu, she ends up becoming a best-selling author, and then the other one, June Hayward, ends up like doesn't even get a paperback release. Her book flops, and she blames it on the fact that like no one wants stories about basic white girls is like the way that the synopsis puts it. And so then June witnesses Athena's like freak death. Like, I guess she like gets to some sort of like crazy accident, witnesses this, and like acts on impulse and steals Athena's manuscript and edits it and then publishes it as under a pseudonym that is like basically meant to sound racially ambiguous. And the story itself is like an experimental novel about the unsung contributions of Chinese laborers to the British and French war efforts during World War I. So it's also like obviously a very personal story to Athena. Mm-hmm. And so that's the story. It's supposed to be very cutting and just like, I think like a pretty dark satirical novel.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited too. That's the one that's definitely at the top of my list as well for this year. It's also interesting because this is Arv Kuang's like first contemporary literary fiction. Kind of. Not that I would say her fantasy works are also very literary fiction leaning, just within a fantasy space, which could be a whole discourse for another day about how that isn't taken as seriously. But this is just interesting that it's kind of a genre shift. So I'm just curious to see, I don't know how it's going to go. It sounds like a very intense, cutting book. I think it's going to be pretty lethal, and I'm looking forward to reading it.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good one, especially because she can be like so cutting.
Exactly.
Like she,
there'll be no punches held back. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, on that note, unless you had any other things that you're anticipating this spring.
No, I think my list is all full, especially now with the ones that you mentioned.
Amazing. Same here. We'd love to hear from you all, though. If there's anything that you're really excited for this spring, definitely let us know so we can add it to our radar. You can send us over an email at cozyclubpodcast@gmail.com. And if you haven't yet, be sure to subscribe and leave a rating because we'd love to have you join our cozy club. Indeed. And we hope you all have a wonderful rest of your day and stay cozy.
Bye.